The Sunday Morning Linux Review. Starring Mary Talmadge, Tony Venus, and Matt Enders as the Beaver.
And this is episode 106.
Geothermal.
Geothermal from Mary's Icelandic trip.
Yes. Oh, it was a great time.
How was your Icelandic trip, Mary?
It was wonderful. I saw glaciers. I actually got a geyser. You know, they had this little geyser area. Well, they've got more than one, but they have these like bubbling mud pits, and they had this geyser that went off, and I got the thing. I recorded it on video, and it's really something else, because when the geyser just started, the water is so blue, and then poof, up comes the steam and all that stuff. It was really something else.
Oh, that's cool.
Is it blue because it's like so pure and that's reflecting the sky back down, or?
I wouldn't be surprised, but when I saw the glaciers, that ice, because it's so compacted, there's kind of a blue reflectivity to it. So
yeah, but that's mostly, it's reflecting the sky back when it.
Not that day, because it was cloudy.
Yeah, you know, that's what I was going to ask you, too, because a lot of the pictures I've seen from Iceland, it's a pretty overcast and dreary country. Was it pretty overcast and dreary? Or?
Yeah, I mean, it was overcast for several days. It was sunny for a couple days. It was rainy for a couple days. Yeah, I mean, the weather ran the gamut. But we really only had 2 days where it was just kind of dreary. But still, it was really something else to see. You know, they had that volcano that erupted back in 2010.
Yes. Yeah, the disrupted the European air travel.
Yeah, that's how you pronounce it? No, I'm
Yeah, those names.
Oh, my gosh. I'm not kidding you. I tried. I thought I had it, and then I asked someone how you pronounce it. I was nowhere close. There's a little glacier that's close by, and what had happened is the volcanic ash shot out of this thing. It just covered this glacier, and so there's just tons of ash on it, and it's just a mess.
Oh, yeah, well, and it's going to absorb more heat then.
Exactly.
So it's going to melt faster.
And so it really has, there's like this lake and stuff. But there was also an iceberg lagoon where this other glacier, these chunks of it are breaking off, and they're blue. I'll have pictures. I'm going to use Caden Live and Audacity to create a little 5-minute movie about it and narrate it. And have a little humor angle to it. But it's really, Tony, I'm so sorry. I've been looking at Matt the whole time.
It's okay. But, we know Matt's more important.
Oh, come on.
Anyway, but you know, Iceland's on a hot spot. I mean, there's like a magma plume that's below it that, you know, that there's a few, or I don't know how many kilometers separating Iceland from that. Right. But the plates are tearing, are kind of drifting apart up there. But they derive, 73% of their electricity they derive from hydroelectric plants. Nuclear, they don't have any nuke plants there. Fossil fuels, 4.7%.
Yeah, because geothermal. I mean, geothermal. Iceland, why wouldn't you use geothermal in Iceland?
Exactly. They'll drill boreholes down, and they will, you know, if it's a good one, because they've hit some water or they've hit, you know, that hot water, then they'll you know, evaluate, they'll build a power plant. They're like these two power plants. Then they have these big, where you might think they're oil pipes, but they're carrying hot water, and everybody
really?
Heats there. Yeah, when you turn your hot tap on, it's instantly hot. I am not kidding you.
Wow.
Unlike the 30 seconds I wait for at my house.
Yeah, yeah. And another thing they do, too, is they actually pipe the geothermal water under the streets and sidewalks so that it melts the snow.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah. And, you know, I did, I also did a little checking. I think last year their government initiated an open source software pilot so that they could kind of wean themselves off proprietary software. Now, I checked it. It was supposed to be about 12 months, and it should be over by now. I haven't really seen anything indicating what the results of that were or was and whether they've done it or not. But I know that their education system for their curriculum, they're using Moodle.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I found that out. I did a little checking on it. But anyway, so that was my fun trip. Drove over there. Gas is kind of expensive.
Yeah.
So, $50 to fill up a little Toyota Yaris.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. So, anyway, but...
what's their currency?
It's the Icelandic krona.
Yeah.
Yep. And 116, this is the exchange rate, 116 of them equals $1. Oh. So I'm looking at stuff.
And then after the shutdown, it was 1-to-1.
No, but in 2008, you know, they really tanked their economy.
Oh, yeah, bad.
Their currency lost 50% of its value overnight.
Oh, yeah, because their whole country, was invested in
that bank.
That bank bond shit.
Oh, yeah, the mortgage-backed securities.
Yeah, mortgage-backed securities.
Yeah, it was something
else. And so when that mortgage-backed securities tanked, Iceland just went boom.
Wow.
It was horrible. People were, like, driving their cars out into the middle of the lakes and setting them on fire. Because they just couldn't afford to make the payments anymore because the currency was worth nothing.
Holy cow.
So, but they've done a pretty good job in recovering, so that's good. And they're regulating the banks. They put their thumbs on the banks because the banks, they let their banks fail. And they said that that's what they were supposed to do. So, anyway. But I guess this is a Linux show, so we should probably talk about that. So, anyway, what did you guys do last week?
Well, what did I do last week? Oh,
Oh, it's going to be good.
Tales from the Data Center.
All right.
I posted this on my G+, too. It was a long post. Did you see it, Tony?
No, I didn't.
No. I must have missed it.
I went through my whole night.
I read through three quarters of it.
I highlighted the funny parts so that you could just read that if you wanted to. But I had a lot to do this night. I had two hard drives to replace for scheduled maintenance, and I had two RAM upgrades to do, and just it was a long night. I mean, part of my night involved this cluster that the day guy had racked, but couldn't get the networking working on. And the network guy said to me, "I fixed the VLAN," because that was the problem in the daytime.
Okay.
"I fixed the VLAN, it should work now." So I spent a couple of hours on it while I was in between stuff, getting to do something else. Couldn't get it to work. So I posted a note in the ticket saying, "I don't think the VLAN's right. I can't get networking to work on this thing at all." Okay? So I went to I had to go to three data centers that night. So I went, after I got done at the two remote data centers, I went back to the home data center in Dearborn. And when I got back there, I noticed that he had posted a reply while I was on the road that said, "No, I guarantee you that VLAN is on there. Check it again."
So you had to drive all the way back out there.
And was it there?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I worked on it for another hour and a half, and now I'm overtime, and the guy that racked it is on shift. Okay?
Yeah.
And I said to him, I got him on an IM, and I was talking to him, and I said, "You realize the importance of this," because it was a dev server for one of our big cluster clients and whatever. "You realize the importance of this. This can't languish. As soon as people start to come in, you have to get higher ups involved. We have to figure out what's wrong here." Because I told him exactly what I've done. I said, "I used AppTool. It says I've got a link. I look at the link lights, and I've got a link."
And they're blinking.
Yeah. They're blinking up there. They're blinking down there. Everything looks like it should be working. Okay?
That would be my technique.
And then this gentleman sometimes is not the most technically adept guy.
Savvy.
I told him I had. I told him I had. That AppTool said I had a link. Right? So what's he say back? He says, "Well, I could make a new cable and put a new cable in place." I'm like, "Dude, I really don't think it's the cable. AppTool says I have a link."
Yeah.
But it got me to thinking. It said, okay, just for giggles, that's not what I said in my head.
But for the family show, there
you are. Let me replace the network cable. Now, remember I said this is part of a cluster. So it's got two network links. One to the public switch and one to the private switch from... Right.
All right.
Normally, we use two different colored cables, so it is obvious which one is plugged in where. But we're abandoning this data center soon. Instead of this gentleman making two cables, he used two cables that were the same color. So I unplugged it, plugged in the new cable, traced it up, and he had the public port from the server into the private switch.
Oh.
So I said, oh, shoot.
Oh, shoot.
Again, I did not say shoot.
All right.
And as soon as I switched them, it started to ping.
Oh, my God.
4 hours I wasted on this.
Oh, my God.
So what's the moral to this story, though? Not that this gentleman is an idiot.
Right.
But ensure that your level one is right first. Ensure that the level one networking is right before you do anything else.
Yep.
Physical
and
has
I,
to be there.
I didn't do that. I did it with software by using Ethtool and looking at the lights, but I didn't physically check that level one layer, and it was the level one layer. So.
Wow.
Anyway, where the hell are my glasses, huh?
All right. Okay, well, that's really something else.
Yeah. This week, I've been really busy. A lot of family stuff. Excuse me. And
that's what happened.
I finally got a case for my Raspberry Pi.
Oh, let's see it.
It's a little clear one.
I'll describe it for everybody. Oh, it's sort of a semi-smoky, opaque. It's
a translucent.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, translucent, so you can see the board inside it.
Oh, this is far better than mine. Where'd you get this?
At Micro Center.
Really?
Micro Center has a Raspberry Pi, a DIY center.
My God.
So they have Raspberry Pi and they have
Arduino,
and then they have a lot of other kits that you can build yourself.
Wow.
I'm getting one of these.
So they had all sorts of Raspberry Pi stuff.
Including Raspberry Pis?
Yeah, they have the Raspberry Pis. They have a kit of everything you need for the Raspberry Pi,
okay.
Which is $60.
Really?
Or $60 or $70. And that includes the power supply, the case, the...
Yeah.
Board, you know, the Raspberry Pi itself, and a flash drive, or an SD card.
And then you got to supply the monitor and the keyboard yourself.
Right.
Okay.
So then I've downloaded the Raspbian to go on here.
Okay.
And I'm going to set it up as
What happened to OpenELEC?
It's still on there right now, but I'm going to make this into a backup server.
Okay.
Run rsync. So I'm going to take this, Velcro it to my external
hard drive.
Which this is way smaller than the hard drive, so it'll sit right on the hard drive. And then I'm going to plug it in at my parents' house, and they'll be my backup server.
Now, will there be any possible interference, radio interference, or is it shielded enough, if you've got it sitting right on it with the magnets and all that?
You think the hard drive's going to interfere with the Raspberry Pi or the other way around?
What are those two?
No, I think it'll be fine.
Yeah.
The casing on the hard drives themselves are pretty good.
Pretty insular.
Are they? Okay.
Yeah, so...
Because you know that isn't too...
Right.
Okay.
No, see, I don't think it'll cause any problems. But then, one of the guys at the Ubuntu Loco, we had a party last Saturday.
Yeah.
And he made a point that it could be a hop point. A hop. So I can, like... I can remote into this. Like, if the internet's working, but there's something wrong with
remote into your Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, remote into the Raspberry Pi.
Okay.
And then now I'm on my parents' network. Now I can try to remote onto their PC or work on their router or something.
Just kidding.
Right. All right. Well, and that's what I've been doing for my server here.
Them, if you want to.
No, I wouldn't do that to my parents.
No, I know.
But I've been doing that here at my home server.
Okay.
That I don't have to open external ports other than 22. And I can get in and I can configure the router remotely using SSH tunneling with SOX.
Yeah.
Then I can get to my entire network through that for any TCP connections. So.
You can do it UDP too.
Does it? Are you sure? Yeah. With SOX? I thought it was only TCP.
No, I'm pretty sure it'll do UDP too. I may be wrong.
I was going to bet you, just on general principle.
No.
I have no idea.
I may be wrong, but I'm pretty sure we'll do UDP, too.
Okay. So that's my plan with that. So pretty exciting things coming up.
Wow, that's very nice.
Yeah.
All right.
Matt, what's happening with the kernel?
I love the kernel news.
I know, me too.
It's a very important part to the show.
I like the kernel news myself.
Everybody should pay attention.
You know what?
I want to know how many lines this week.
One of the purposes of the kernel news,
okay,
for anyone out there who's listening and may be interested.
I did
this
not
This will all become clear during listener feedback.
And we love our
listeners. I do the kernel news... because I want to get people interested in the kernel. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if I say things like, oh, there were 58 files changed and this many lines inserted and this many lines deleted, it does two things. First thing it does is show you that the kernel is constantly growing larger. So eventually this thing is going to be a behemoth. All right? And another thing it's meant to do is that you may say to yourself,
put you to sleep.
I wonder what those 58 files were.
I ask that every week.
And I wonder what lines were inserted and deleted. And then you can
So are you going to enlarge
out.
Your report?
No, I'm not going to enlarge the report.
All right.
It's meant to be just a curiosity generator that then maybe you would go out and do some research on your own.
Oh. I never realized that. Oh.
All right.
Now I am going to.
Anyway.
I'm kidding. No,
on with the kernel news.
Okay.
We did have a release candidate on Sunday, the 13th of October, 2013, at 1552 Pacific Daylight Time. Linus Torvalds released kernel 3.12-RC5, and here's what he had to say about it. Things seem to be calming down nicely, and RC5 is smaller than previous RCs. In fact, the most excitement we had this week wasn't even a kernel bug. It was a compiler bug. WRT ASM GoTo that was found because of code that is pending to be merged in 3.13. But happily, fairly straightforward, workaround for the bug was merged early because we do use ASM GoTo. And it's unclear whether our existing use might already trigger the bug, just not enough to be as obviously noticeable. Aside from that, most of the changes here in the usual architecture fixes, like tile, ARM, x86, S390, and drivers, GPU, HID, Sound, I2C, Watchdog, with ButterFS and the perf tool updates rounding out the rest, and the usual random noise. Go forth and test. So the main lines 3.12-RC5 are stable updates. On Sunday, the 13th of October, Greg Guharma released kernel 3.0.100 with 48 files changed, 267 lines inserted, and 216 lines deleted. Note, the 3.0.x kernel series will be moving to end of life soon, within a few weeks. Please move anything that is relying on this kernel version to the other long-term kernel releases, 3.4.x or 3.10.x, as soon as possible. If anyone has any questions about this, please let me know. And by me, I don't mean me, I mean Greg Hartman.
Because that was still part of the quote.
Right.
So,
hey, I got a question for you on your kernel news.
Go ahead.
So you indicate you know the files, and then you indicate the lines. So where do these lines figure into that?
It's the files that were changed. Like that update had 48 files changed.
Yes.
So in those 48 files that were changed, 267 lines had been inserted in those files, and 216 lines had been deleted from those files.
Gotcha. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
On Sunday, the 13th of October, 2013, at 16:07 Pacific Daylight Time, Greg Guharma released kernel 3.4.66, with 60 files changed, 297 lines inserted, and 204 lines deleted. On Sunday, the 13th of October, at 18:13, Greg Guharma released kernel 3.10.16, with 123 files changed, 1,111 lines inserted, and 529 lines deleted. On Sunday, the 13th of October, 2013, at 18:47 Pacific Daylight Time, Greg Guharma released kernel 3.11.5, with 150 files changed, 1,413 lines inserted, and 683 lines deleted. And the kernel developer quote of the week comes from the man himself, Linus Torvalds. Fedora Project, is there some basic reason why you never regenerate the install images? Right now, the F19 install images use some ancient 3.9-based kernel, which means that they may boot on most machines, but it's missing wireless IDs for new laptops, etc. So making it useful is unnecessarily painful.
Did he say anything about partitions and all that? No.
No.
Oh, that's funny.
So, but that's all for the kernel news.
All right, thanks, Matt.
But I do have some comments on that freaking Fedora partitioner, which we'll get to later.
Oh.
before, we can get to it now if anyone wants.
I don't know, Tony. I'm thinking now.
Sure.
Immediate gratification. I want now.
Do you remember maybe how I said last week that I would be running Slackware this week?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I lied.
It's next week.
No. I'm running Fedora, but I'm running Fedora again.
Okay.
I did install Slackware, but again, I got to get with some people that know Slackware better than me, because again, when I installed it, I then boot to a command prompt and have to do start X. Okay?
Can't you script that?
Well, you can, but I shouldn't have to. I should boot to a graphical environment.
There's a
this is Mr. Command. This is Mr. Command
on
line.
On servers. This is my personal
laptop. Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You just edit the, or you add a file into
I know, but it should do it. It should be done for me. Okay? And that wasn't the big killer, though. The big killer was I could not get my wireless to work. So, I had to have
did
a wired
you do,
connection. So, anyway, I reinstalled Fedora. Because I had to, because I wiped it
okay.
out. There was no upgrading.
Yeah.
And oh my freaking God, that partitioner is a piece of shit.
Yes! 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 I told you it was.
It's almost unusable.
Exactly.
If I wouldn't have had some basic understanding of what I was trying to do.
Exactly.
And knowledge about how I should just progress, I would have been lost, totally lost.
It's
not obvious what you're supposed to do at all.
Exactly.
And it doesn't tell you what you're supposed to do at all.
And I caught crap for saying that during that review, but it for being such a a polished distro, because once it's installed, it's a good distro.
It's a great distro. I love Fedora.
Yeah, they should.
The partitioner is horrible.
We could almost use this for the distro review. But
horrible. Oh my God!
How bad was it, Matt?
But it was horrible.
But Matt, why do you need a partitioner? You just boot in with a different OS ahead of time and partition everything you need.
Well, it was. It was already partitioned. I just used the same partitions. But you've got to still tell the new OS which partitions are which.
Yeah, and it's not.
Did you realize I used your quote? That's the exact same thing you told me.
Oh,
good one, Tony. That's hilarious. You know, I was listening to him just whining over here about the command line or graphic this and that. Oh, man.
It was horrible.
I'm not going to give you a hard time because I know how bad that partitioner
it's
is.
It's horrible. Horrible.
They would be better off just setting up a script to go out to Gparted or not Gparted. Well, maybe Gparted. Because there's a couple of distros that do that I have reviewed.
Right, where
you just go out there, do that, and come right back in.
Right. Because guess what? That other tool is a partitioner.
And guess what?
They've got their shit together.
Yeah, exactly.
And guess what? You can use it.
Yeah. I hear you. I hear you.
Why reinvent the wheel? Come on, Fedora.
I feel your pain.
Jeez.
So, anyway.
Tony, what's going on with the Linux distributions this week?
All right. So last week on the 12th,
ooh. I just realized I forgot to open DistroWatch. Sorry.
Oh my God.
October 12th, 2013.
Yeah.
Was released PC Linux OS 2013.10.
Yeah.
And this is the latest updates for their maintenance for KDE, MiniMe, and LXDE versions.
Yes, and did you know what they've indicated that you don't have to download this release if you've already updated the current KDE installation. But they said if you want a clean, quick start with PC Linux OS KDE 4.10.5, then you should download it and install that version. So
there's a lot of development releases.
Yeah, I saw that too.
The next one we have is Rebellion.
Rebellion?
Rebellion. I don't know why I can never get these names right. Rebellion Linux 2.0.
You start off pretty good. Yep.
I got that first one right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
This
reviewed
is this. Debian based. It's a commercial distro showcasing a highly customized GNOME 3 desktop.
Yep. It gives them.
They're using Wheezy with backports.
Yeah, I lost my place. Thanks for picking that up.
Yeah, let me just say that they've got two versions because I reviewed this. I paid the guy $5. This is the distro where you pay $5 and you get lifetime email support for as long as the product exists.
Oh, yeah.
And they've got two flavors. They've got Synergy and Adrenaline. And as I recall, I went with Adrenaline because it just sounded faster. But if you read what he said, I don't know if you guys read what this what the maintainer said in his on DistroWatch here, but he said it will make your productivity go straight up, which I thought was pretty funny. And not only that, but he also said performance matters, and that will it give respectable speed? And then he says yes. Just kind of the way he presented his information, I just thought was kind of humorous. And I say that in a very positive way. But
yeah. Is that the guy that's from like India?
India,
or something?
Yep. Yeah. And I mean, I had a bit of email communication with him when I was in the process, you know, when I was acquiring the software. And he was very helpful. And they do have some nice tutorials there on the site, because I went in, you know, as I recall from my review, I went in and took a look at them and thought they were pretty good. And I just thought, I don't know how long he's going to be able to last to do all this, but he's still releasing. So.
All right.
Okay, what do we got next?
Next one is Vine Linux 6.2, which is a general purpose Japanese distribution with GNOME 2.3 as the default environment.
Yeah, you know, they've got Vine Linux, they've got a commercial version, and then they have, you know, the community version. And, of course, as is typical, I think, with most companies that have that kind of scenario where you've got a commercial and a community, the community folks, you're going to get your help from they were pretty explicit on their website that doesn't come with any support. You get it from the forums and that type of thing, and I think there's a wiki there. Yeah. But if you want to purchase it, you can.
Another thing that does, though, is in their community version, all the non-free codecs and fonts aren't there. Whereas in their proprietary, their paid-for version, it does have the proprietary codecs and fonts.
Mm.
So.
All right. Yeah, because they have to pay a license to be able to include all that. So that makes sense.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, we have SlackL 5.0 OpenBox.
Oh, yeah.
It's the OpenBox is the lightweight desktop based on Slackware.
There you go, Matt. Try that one.
Yeah, you should go with SlackL.
SlackL. It's got a
OpenBox.
Nice ring. It's got a nice ring to
it. That laptop.
Yeah, it would.
Excuse me, but it's got a nice ring to it.
But it's not KDE.
You can, yeah, they got a KDE version.
This one's OpenBox, but yeah, I'm sure they do.
Yeah, they do.
Because it's based on Slackware, so it's got to be KDE.
Yeah, Slackware is very KDE oriented.
And not only that, this ISO too that they've got is a hybrid ISO, so that you can go ahead and put it on a USB drive or just a CD and run it from there if you want. Because this is that live; it's really designed to be run live.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Cool.
All right.
And then today released is Ubuntu 13.10.
The Ubuntu family of distros.
Yeah, with codename Saucy Salamander. And as there's been a lot of talk about it, there was it's still running Unity. It is not running Mir. They're still on X.
Shock. Shock! I'm shocked. It's not running Mir.
Although their Ubuntu Touch for the phone stuff, that's running Mir. But along with this release, there's Ubuntu Studio, Zubuntu, and Kubuntu, have all been released today.
Mm-hmm.
So Ubuntu Studio is a Ubuntu subproject, providing a full range of multimedia content creation applications for audio, graphics, video, photography, and publishing. Zubuntu is the official flavor with XFCE as the lightweight desktop.
Yep, and of course, Kubuntu.
Kubuntu, that's Mary. You ran that for a very long time.
Yeah,
you still run it on your desktop,
7-8
right?
Years. I still run it at home.
Yeah.
So my laptop has been completely subsumed into PCBSD now.
Yeah, with KDE.
Yeah.
And it's 4.11 is the version they're running.
Okay, so good for them. All right, it is. Let's see who's.
The distro of the week, according to DistroWatch, calculated by website hits per day.
Number 5 is Watts OS. with 1770.
And trending up.
Number four is Ubuntu with 2338.
And trending up.
I was going to say, what's up with that? Never mind. Bad, bad joke.
And number three is PC Linux OS with 2416.
And trending up.
Number two is Debian with 2418.
And trending up.
And in the number one spot is Mint.
Gotta love that minty goodness.
With 3701.
And trending up.
I'm sure Ubuntu will be at the top of the list next week.
No.
You don't think so?
No.
I'm sure it will be because they've only had today.
No.
Just came out.
No.
Anyway, I think this is the first week out of the 106 episodes we've done that everything is trending up.
Yes.
It's always been up and down, up and down.
Always. But yeah, this is the first time everything's up.
It's the Ubuntu bump.
And you've got to go all the way down to number seven before you get the first down, which is
Magia. I saw that sitting down there. And then right below it, Fedora is actually right below it.
Yes, but it's trending up also.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, well, that's pretty good. All right, well, I think, let's see, must be time for what?
What distro are you reviewing this week, Mary?
Actually, you know, half of the week I was in Iceland, so I when I got back, I did take a look at something, and I'm going to talk a little bit about it. And I managed to install it on my laptop, but it got a little jiggy, and so I ended up putting PCBSD back on it. I mean, I wiped the drive and put PCBSD on the entire thing. Because of this distro. It's a test distro, and I believe it's from Russia. It's called Gears on Gallium. Now, Gallium, if you're probably familiar with Gallium, I believe it's like a graphics chip, or it's something along those lines. This particular distro, as far as I can understand it, it's based on OpenSUSE, and you know, I've not done many reviews of OpenSUSE-based distros or OpenSUSE itself. And when I ran it live, I was reminded of how nice OpenSUSE is because it's just complete. It's very polished, graphically crisp, high resolution. And Gears on Gallium did the same thing because again, it runs the latest kernel. Gears on Gallium runs kernel 3.12. I mean, that's .0RC3. I mean, isn't that almost the latest kernel?
Yeah, it's pretty close.
Yeah, I mean, the purpose of this thing is I want to say to kind of test graphics or at least to
take... Do they run an RC kernel out of the box?
RC3-7. It's a test distro, yeah. This is a test distro. It's not...
Now that is bleeding edge.
That's total bleeding edge.
Yeah, and they run a KDE desktop. Matt, I'm thinking this might be for you.
No. Too anyway, bleeding edge. It's breaky. Sounds breaky.
Well, I did run into a couple of issues first of all, I put it on the USB stick.
Right.
I DD'd it over. No problem there. I booted it, and it looks great. I mean, graphics are really crisp, and again, because it uses the latest of a whole bunch of different things, Mesa, just a bunch of different things that are available. And there's no Office Suite on it. There's no mail client. It uses, you know, the KDE file manager, Dolphin, which I love, and Chromium browser. And I don't even think Conker is in there as a browser. But... it's a straight, you know, for the install process, I ended up putting it on the hard drive and I installed Grub and I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to see if Grub is going to find my PCBSD partition. Grub did not find it. And that's because it's ZFS and I think there must have been a little problem there. So I could not, I went in, and this is where I ran into problems, but I went in and then I've got a special Super Grub disk that has saved me every time. I put that thing in, and it's about a year old, so it's not that old. But I tried to rescue my partition, and it wouldn't find it. So I ended, and that's the story behind me reinstalling PCBSD across my entire hard disk. So it's running across everything, and that's because I couldn't get to it anymore. And not only that, but Gears on Gallium, it was, when I'd boot into it, sometimes it'd boot beautifully in, and sometimes it's like the driver loaded a little too early, and I ended up with a kind of a borked graphics display. So it was, you know, it's clearly experimental. I was not at all upset with it. I just thought, well, that's it's to be expected. But what I found very interesting is that it comes installed with the Steam client, you know, the game client.
Oh.
And it kind of makes sense for the graphics, you know.
Yeah,
graphics, yeah. And there's a little spoiler alert, though. You need to have an external hard drive if you're going to play it, unless you install, because... the settings, if you're running it off a USB stick, the settings are not going to persist, and I think to really be effective, you've got to run it off after you install it on a hard drive. But I suspect that it would probably fire up and run, you know, pretty well and look really good, provided that it boots properly. And I got it to boot properly as many times as I didn't. So, but again, it's an experimental release. I wanted to share that with you. I'll put a link to it in the show notes. So, and again, it's called Gears on Gallium, and that kind of piqued my curiosity. So,
cool.
So that's what I got this week on that. So there you have it. Short but sweet. But yeah, you know, I did have a lot of time. So
it's time for the tech news of the week.
News of the week. News you can lose. I mean, use.
News you can use. I only have one story this week, and I didn't write it.
But you're going to read it?
No, I'm going to read part. I'm going to read highlights.
That was very funny. I have one story, but I didn't write it. I plagiarized it. No.
No, I didn't. I'm kidding. I give credit. But Oracle says open source has no place in military apps. The foundation of the arguments is that developing applications based on open source software has hidden costs, ooh, mostly in labor. It also warns that open source software may not scale. Commercial software companies have developed highly refined methodologies to perform these tasks, the document suggests. Don't underestimate the difficulties associated with testing open source software and incorporating required changes into the main development stream, especially when it comes to testing for robustness and reliability under load. Oracle also argues that the DoD need not concern itself with integrating software into the world's myriad hardware ecosystems, again, because it is hard to do and Big Red's already doing the heavy lifting. Another argument suggests it will be harder to certify open source derived projects as secure than it will be to buy a certified app from guess who? Oracle.
Oh,
or so, or other software vendors. But yeah, Larry Ellison has decided that the DoD should not use open source software. So, beware.
He's like the new Steve Ballmer.
He's always been.
And then what has he got? He's kind of, well, he's taken Red Hats, or all the clone of Red Hat. And
yeah, they're CentOS. Except,
and they could slap
the Oracle name on it, you know.
And they got Tux in that crazy little knight outfit, you know, that big.
Yeah.
So, all right. So that's the end of your story, must be. All right, you tipping that
thing
back.
Yes, Mary.
All right. Sorry, I didn't mean to ask you why you were sipping there. Well, I've got a story this week that I thought was kind of interesting, and it has to do with TrueCrypt. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I've used TrueCrypt. I'm not currently using it, but I have in the past. And it's a, you know, it's really a great encryption utility that'll encrypt a volume, I mean, your whole partition, or you can create an encrypted container inside or on your hard drive and put stuff in there. But there apparently, and again, this is something that I saw in Ars Technica, apparently, nobody really knows exactly who wrote TrueCrypt because they went by these little aliases, and also the TrueCrypt license isn't really open source, so you can't freely go and examine the code. So, there's a handful of cryptographers or cryptographers.
Oh yeah.
They've discussed the problems and alternatives to that, and so. on Monday, it really culminated in a public call to perform a full security audit on TrueCrypt. And I thought that was such a great idea that I went and contributed a few bucks to the project, because they've got an Indiegogo. They've got a couple of fundraising efforts to raise the money to pay for the time that's going to take to really do that full research. So I think it's a good idea. And they've got a, there's a site there called IsTrueCryptAuditedYet.com. So you can check and see, you know, the status of things, where the fundraising is. And they're getting closer to having enough money to do it. So I thought that was pretty interesting, and I wanted to share that.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah. So that's my...
Oh, there was something else, too, that I wanted to mention. And it's a little old, but it just...
How old?
I just found out about it.
So it's new to you.
Yes. old news, new to me. But it is... Let's see if I can find it here real quick.
While you look that up, okay. I'm gonna.
Well, he's gonna fill the dead space with something.
All right.
What do you got?
So I haven't hidden my affection for Mint, and it's mainly because of cinnamon. I love the cinnamon desktop.
It's not Mint; it's just cinnamon that you like.
Pretty much. I mean, okay. Mint wraps everything up, and it works really well.
Yeah.
I tried running it on Ubuntu for a long time, and it was always buggy.
Uh-huh.
And when I moved over to Mint, then it just ran great and ran smooth.
Okay.
So that's why I stick with Mint.
Makes sense.
I found, so right now they're not running, it's still like a 1. Something. I don't know what version I'm on right now at the moment, but
okay.
The new version is, it's going to be 2.0. And that's not going to be released until with Mint 16, which will be the next release.
Okay.
Although there is a how-to on how to install Cinnamon 2.0 with Ubuntu and Linux Mint.
Do you have a PPA that you got to add, or?
Yep. Yeah, okay. There's a PPA.
Okay.
So you do the add apt repository, uh-huh. PPA, and then it's in this link. I'll put it in there.
Oh, okay.
So it's pretty cool. You go through, and it's basically just apt-get install, and then you have to make sure you install Nemo also.
Nemo is the Nautilus replacement, or it's the file manager,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, okay. To replace Nautilus, correct.
I can't find it. I thought I posted it on G+, but I must not have. I must have been going, oh, I should post this on G+, and then didn't.
Right.
Anyway, it's the, I can't remember the guy's name. It's Shiri something. He's an Israeli cryptographer. He's the S in RSA.
Oh.
Okay?
All right.
And he could not attend for the first time since its inception, because he helped organize this conference originally. It's the one put on by the NSA or about history of cryptography.
Uh-huh.
And it's been going on for 33 years, and he was the very first opened the very first conference ever with a talk. And he couldn't get his visa approved in time.
Because the government shut down?
No. No, this happened before the government shutdown, but just because they dicked around, just because they're, and the story went on to talk about how this is a problem for scientists all over the, that's gotten greater. It's like America is making it difficult for scientists to come and collaborate, which is just going to encourage them to go to other countries to collaborate.
Let me tell you something, and that reminds me, you know, when I was going through security in Iceland, I could leave my shoes on.
Yeah, why? Because taking your shoes off is freaking ridiculous.
Yeah.
But hey, we're all about the security theater as opposed to security.
Yeah, I tell you. Well, that's really unfortunate, because if that does occur and people just start going to other countries because it's easier, that's just it's bad for us.
So
I don't know if that didn't sound too intelligent, but you know what I'm trying to say.
Yes, it was. That's exactly the point they were trying to make.
Yeah.
So
okay.
Cool. By the way, I'm running Cinnamon 1.8.8. That's what the default on Mint 15 right now. So I just wanted to add that one a little bit in.
Okay.
And then I found one more article I want to mention.
Yeah.
What do you guys think is the largest open source company?
The largest open, Facebook.
Well, it depends on how you Google.
Right. Well, as right. a couple years ago, Which no, no, a couple us? Years ago, it would have been, it was Google.
Oh, okay.
But Matt's right, Facebook. And there's an article on here that I found that he went through and said,
you know, saw that article already? Because he's over there looking like, wow, he's just
I posted
smart.
It in IRC.
No. I had seen that article earlier. Okay.
I'm glad somebody called you out. Oh, that's funny.
But they've contributed to a lot of open source projects. Not only is there their Open Compute, which is their open sourcing their data center setup, but then they've contributed to Cassandra, which is a NoSQL database, Thrift, which is a framework for scalable cross-language services development, Apache Hive, which is a data warehouse infrastructure built on top of Hadoop.
Okay.
And then they do a lot of other stuff too. So it's I thought it was pretty cool. I knew that they gave back, but I didn't realize to that extent.
Yeah, they give back a lot. They're as good as Red Hat when it comes to giving back.
Oh, Facebook.
Yeah,
but I think this is probably because you would think of Red Hat. I would have thought of Red Hat first.
Yeah.
Right when I saw the title of the article, that's what I thought in my head right away was Red Hat.
Red Hat. Yeah. And the NoSQL database that they it's what Cassandra.
Yeah, Cassandra.
Huh. I find that concept kind of interesting because I'm so steeped in. You know, relational databases, and you know, I understand them and appreciate them and all that. So we're talking about databases that are NoSQL databases. It's sometimes a little. I've got to do a little more research on it so I can understand it, because it's kind of hard to understand it, because it's. I tend to be very structured. You know, not in all things, but you know, as far as thinking about data and how you can get to it and that type of thing. So.
Yeah.
But, well, that's surprising.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
I'm still not going to use Facebook. I don't care.
I don't either anymore.
I mean,
that's what Drackle says.
What's that?
Face Black.
Yeah.
Say Facebook.
I left Facebook a little over a year ago, I guess. Yep, I haven't been back since.
Yeah, you should see I've been posting on your Facebook. Yeah, I think I got a birthday.
Yeah, that's how you found out, because I didn't delete the account. I just don't use it anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
I only use mine because it's required for a couple of forum things, as that's how they control users.
Oh, you sign in.
Yeah, so it kind of annoys me. So then every once in a while, I'll go to my Facebook page and I find out all this stuff about people I know. I think, oh, I didn't know that. So then I think, oh, I guess it is useful in that way. But, you know, it's kind of a vanity thing in a way, too.
Yeah.
I guess so. All right. So, I guess, any more news?
I don't have any more news.
I just ran across the headline. I didn't read it yet, but it says Nginx raises $10 million in funding for a new server.
Oh,
for
yeah.
For the server development.
They had a Kickstarter.
Yeah. So, Nginx is a web server similar to Apache, but Nginx is known for more
speed with static pages.
Right. So if you're running just straight HTML, they're really fast and loads
it up.
Just nice.
Something that doesn't need to be generated. That's not right. Using PHP or something to generate pages on the fly.
Right.
Oh, okay.
And almost all websites today are using
some sort of generator.
Yeah, if you have a CMS that's web-based, like we use WordPress or there's Drupal, then you need PHP, and thus you use Apache. Yeah, it's possible to use the Nginx with PHP, but what you end up doing is, or this is a few versions ago I had to do, is I had to still run Apache and Nginx.
Oh, that sounds awful.
And proxy the calls to Apache.
It proxied the calls over to Apache to bring back and then display the pages.
Oh, that sounds awful.
Yeah, I don't think you have to do that anymore.
No, okay. But. Yeah, I'd heard they had
done that. We were doing some, I don't know, this is way above my pay grade at work, but we were looking at Nginx and doing, like, we just put out a new white paper, too, on Expression Engine, because we're a big, we're a big Magento partner. We're a big Expression Engine partner also. But so I was looking at some of our stuff, and we were looking at Nginx to do some stuff. So I don't think that is the case anymore, though.
Right. Yeah, and I think I'd heard about, I don't know if it was 6 months ago, that they had integrated in PHP support or something. So, yeah. Either that or maybe that's what this fundraiser was for, was to make sure they can get PHP running with it easily, or I don't. Like I said, I didn't read through the whole article, but that's pretty cool.
Wow. I guess it is. I'm just kidding. But did you know that you can install Nginx on FreeBSD?
Yes.
Okay, good. Just wanted to get my little plug
in
for BSD.
I didn't know.
Yeah.
But thanks for making that.
I just wanted to mention that. In fact, I think it performs very well on it.
Yeah. Almost anything you can install on FreeBSD that you can install on Linux. I have never found something on Linux that I couldn't install on FreeBSD.
Uh-huh. Just runs a little better on FreeBSD.
Defined better.
All right, anyway.
All right. Well, I guess I got one more news item.
Yeah, what'd you get?
This week we're having an Is It Alive episode.
Ooh.
And it's a twist.
Ooh.
All right. So do we want to go to Is It Alive then?
I don't know. Do we got any more news to talk about?
I'm done with the news.
All right.
Now it's time for Mary's quiz show. Is It Alive?
So, yes, this week we've got Is It Alive? Or is it... All right, here's the twist, Matt. Just stay seated. Remain calm. Or is it another Ubuntu OS?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
We had that discussion about how many. So I kind of thought, that'd make an interesting twist, especially because today Saucy Salamander was released. So during this segment of the show, she squeaked. I am so sorry. I've got this cold, and my voice kind of freaks out and squeaks.
That's all right. We'll only hold it against you.
Yeah, all right. Anyway, I challenged Matt and Tony to identify whether a Linux distro was alive or dead. Every other week, I twist the concept for our game show and challenge them to decide if the name entity is a Linux distro or something else. This week is Twist Week, and in the spirit of Ubuntu's latest release, Saucy Salamander, I was going to do something with animals, but then I thought, no, this twist is going to be whether the name Linux distro is based on Ubuntu. And each one of the ones I have here ends in OS. I just thought, because you notice sometimes I'll do such and such OS. So each one has that. So extra credit, as is customary, gentlemen, extra credit will be given if you correctly identify whether it's alive or dead. So you can run up the point. So don't be looking at my laptop since you're both kind of creeping around here. So anyway, okay, the first one, you guys, is Mundus OS, MUNDUS OS.
Mundus.
I'm going to say yes and alive.
I'm going to say no and dead.
All right. Someone was right. It is alive, and it is based on Ubuntu.
Yes.
How many points did you get?
Because
I'm looking at this in a PDF of viewer, so I can't adjust.
I can write it down. Let's see if I have a pen. Oh, I've got one in my pocket.
That's okay. I'll keep track.
All right.
All right. So the next one is called Own OS. OWN OS.
I'm going to say no and alive.
Yes and alive.
Yes and alive.
Oh, tied no, up. We're tied up.
That's right. Now, Own OS, it's based on Ubuntu Linux, blah, 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 blah. And it primarily focuses on video and audio editing applications as well as a complete range of digital life, blah, blah, blah. It's a foreign one, so the translation gets lost a little bit. Okay, the next one is Mag OS, MAGOS, Mag OS.
I'm going to say yes and alive.
No and alive.
No and alive.
Oh, no.
4-2.
Now, Mag OS is a versatile distribution based on Mandriva and ROSA Linux. So... It's not Ubuntu based. The next one is DAX OS, D-A-X OS, or as they like to say, DAX OS GNU Linux.
Alive, but I figure out whether it's Ubuntu based. Yeah.
Okay, yes and alive.
And I'm going to say no, dead.
Yes and alive.
Oh, no.
We have a crash and burn happening over here on my right. Okay, Tony, you're going to have to...
A little clue there. You knew it was alive because of the way she said, or as they like to say.
Maybe. All right. The next one is Anoke OS.
Yes and alive.
No and dead.
It's no and alive. So you get 1 point.
7, yeah.
Yeah, Tony. And that's the last one.
It was yes and alive all the way through. So I figured I would just stick with that.
Oh, no, I got one more. I'm sorry. There's one more. Okay, this next one is called Bulu OS. And I will tell you that this distro is or was Chinese.
Bulu
OS.
Yes and alive.
No and dead.
No and alive.
So eight to two.
8 to 2.
That's right. So anyway, boy, Tony, you're a little rusty. You get free of the dust and rust off you. So join us next. I'm not going to say next week. Next time, maybe next week, for another edition of Is It Alive? All right.
All right.
Wow, that was brutal, Tony. Still wiping the dust off.
Yeah.
So, okay, well, I guess we're moving on to...
It's listener feedback time.
And we have a listener feedback line, and that number is 313-626-9140.
Let's see, we had...
It's because I have to download mine.
From Bob... Our friend Bob.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, Bob.
Who says, I like the show, but what's up with the Colonel news and mentioning lines deleted and inserted? What purpose does this serve? It gives no useful or interesting information. Whoopee! 237 lines were deleted from the Colonel. In my humble opinion, I think he's using M-I-M-O-H-O incorrectly because I don't think his opinion's humble. It just seems odd even mentioning point releases and how many insertions, deletions there were. I can't imagine anyone out there listening saying, oh, good to know, the Colonel had 432 lines inserted last week. Anyway, other than that, I enjoy the show and listen each week. Keep up the good work.
Oh, when that
so
came
that,
in.
That now that explains the discussion we had at the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
And how we expressed our profound love for the Colonel.
Yeah, for the Colonel. And right. My reply to Bob was, thanks for listening. Now, let me give you an answer. I do, and don't care if anybody else does. Have a good day.
All right.
Yeah. No, I went on to elaborate on my reasons for the way I do the Colonel news earlier in the show.
Yeah.
Rewind if you didn't get it.
Okay. So I think we got some. I thought
All right.
We got some others.
I got an email from K5 Tux, or he's also known as Russ Woodman. He is one of the guys from Linux and the Ham Shack.
Ham Shack.
Oh, yep.
And we are going to do cross promotion. So at the end of the show, I'm going to play their promo, and they are playing ours.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. What about Haiku?
Haiku, we are in talks with the Haiku guys, and we're going to have an interview coming up.
Right, but... Like a lot of their guys are in Europe, so if we did it in the morning, it would actually be better for them. And
right, so it'll probably wait at least a couple more weeks when we have a morning show.
Oh, yeah, because in Iceland right now it's midnight.
Yeah.
And in Europe it's probably 1 in the morning. So I know I saw that, and I thought that would be really good. I'm going to read up on Haiku so I can ask
I saw him at OLF, and okay. I started talking to him about it.
Thanks for doing that.
Yeah.
Thanks for doing that.
Then we had a couple of mails from Scott, our buddy Scott of Montana Linux. And the first one, he said he hasn't listened to the show, but he plans to, and he wrote a blog about Fedora, Anaconda, and partitioning issues that I wanted to share. And he says, I'm not trying to get a mention on the show, but hey, we'll mention you anyway, Scott. And I thought you might enjoy seeing it, and he's got a link to his blog post. But if you just go to MontanaLinux.org, that's where his blog is. You can find it pretty easily.
Yeah, I went out there. It was a pretty lengthy post.
It was. It's pretty in-depth. Scott's a pretty in-depth guy. I like Scott a lot. So. And then his next one is way too long to read on the air.
But he was talking about how Matt broke his yum. And
yeah, and it told me how to fix it.
How to fix
it. I'm definitely keeping this for future reference.
Okay, so. Good, good. Should post that maybe in the show notes, too.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. If I ever actually post show notes again, I haven't posted them for quite some time.
Yeah, I've been the only one updating the show notes, and so I would appreciate a minute.
Yeah. Maybe.
All right.
And then we have an email from, where is it? Where'd they go? Oh, it's in my other email. This one is from Brad Alexander. And he says that he's been using PGP, and he wants to thank us for bringing this info out, you know, to the public and talking about it some more. He says that we did a pretty good job of explaining on how encryption works, but wants to clarify that the public key is used by the remote user to encrypt to the user and verify signatures from the user. And the private key is used to sign a message or a file called non-repudiation, as well as to decrypt messages from that's encrypted with the public key. And he goes on to talk about it, and he gave a little drawing, but in words.
Okay.
So I included that in the show notes. But saying how private keys you use to sign a message and you use it to decrypt, and public keys are used to verify signatures and to encrypt the message. Another thing I found out with my mail with Evolution, I don't know, I haven't looked in to see if this is the standard or whether it's just Evolution that does this.
It's just Evolution. I'm just going
to
tell you.
If a message is encrypted and sent to you, if you still cannot decrypt it unless you verify the signature, the person that sent it to you.
Really?
Yeah. So because he had sent me an encrypted message, and I didn't have his public key, and it wouldn't decrypt it until I got his public key.
Wow.
How
long did it take you to do that? You have to go out to the server or something?
I had to go find it, but it wasn't listed the way I thought it was, so I had to do a couple different searches, and then I finally found it.
Okay, was it a profound message?
Yeah, it was the message I just read online.
Okay. All right.
So, yeah.
And during the show, we did get a voicemail. So we did.
Did you listen to it?
I did not yet. I listened to it.
Did you?
It's spam.
Is it?
Yeah, it's some guy saying, it came in earlier today. It wasn't during the show.
Okay. I didn't see it.
You can barely hear it. He's saying something about, I've got a job interview for you. Call me back.
That pays really good. And I get those calls all the time.
He gives the phone number like 10 times.
Okay.
So, yeah, we're not going to play
it. We're not going to play it. Delete.
All right. Okay. So, any more listener feedback?
No.
All right. Well, let's talk about the Ocular thing. Now, the reason why we're going to talk about this is because I mentioned earlier about the reinstall of PCBSD because of that whole other, you know, grub partition thing. Anyway, I had prepared my show notes and my files using my other computer and LibreOffice. So I put my stuff in Dropbox, and I accessed Dropbox from this computer, And I realized that I had just installed PCBSD and I had not installed the Office Suite yet. So I thought, how in the world am I going to be able to read these files? Oh. So when I downloaded them from Dropbox, I clicked on it to open it, and the option to open it was provided for Ocular to open it. Hmm. And so I opened it, and sure enough, Ocular opened up the ODT file, and it looks as good as if I had typed it. Of course, the downside is that I'm looking at it in read-only, you know, because, yeah, again, it's treating it like a PDF. But so that's the downside. But the upside is the fact that I have access to the information, and that's really all that I wanted. So
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, so it worked really well. So I'm going to pass it along, that inadvertent tip.
Yeah,
Ocular. Lucky tip, yeah. Huh. So if you find yourself
needing, I did not know that Ocular would do that. That's
pretty
interesting.
Yeah, I didn't either. So now we know.
All right.
Okay. I guess that's our toolbox.
You know what I just thought about, Mary?
What?
If you had wiped your PCBSD.
Yeah.
You lost your private key to your MFT key.
Yeah. You got to make a new key.
So, yeah, you got to redo it.
And then we got to download it.
And you got to call it, like, Mary.
You got to name it something.
Mary different. T or something that people can find it.
Right. Okay, guys.
Unless you backed it up somewhere. If you backed it up somewhere, then you still have it.
Well, it might be in Dropbox.
Did you put it in Dropbox?
It's unlikely.
I shouldn't do it.
Because if you
I
put it in Dropbox, that was stupid.
I was just going to, no, and it's not in Dropbox.
Okay.
For that very reason, Matt, because it would be viewable by anybody using a backdoor.
It's a little silly. Yeah.
So
it's unlikely. It's in its own hidden folder, so it wouldn't have automatically went into Dropbox.
Right.
Yeah, so.
So unless you actually
I did
took
not.
The time to back it up somewhere, it didn't get backed up.
I did not, so I lost it.
Yeah.
Okay, I accept that.
Because you didn't re-keep your you didn't keep your home partition, right?
No.
You just wiped everything.
I wiped everything, yeah. So it's ZFS, and I got all sorts of data sets, and I'm going to start finding out and what those all mean, and then start to try to convince you guys to switch. So.
Okay. All right. Well, we're coming to the end of the show then.
We're good. We can watch Tiger baseball.
Yeah.
Go Tigers.
Featured music of the week.
I don't know if you guys listened to last week's. Did you listen to it? I threw a song in at the end.
I did.
We didn't talk about it, but.
I listened to it.
Yeah. Did you?
Even when I do listen, I don't listen to the music.
Well, you probably would have liked the music from last week. I want to say what the name is, but I can't remember off the top of my head, so I got to go back to the show notes. It was Trucker Lassie Blues by the Noisy Neighbors.
Oh.
That was last week's song.
I liked it.
Yeah. And then this week, why did it do
Shotgun
it?
Wedding? No.
No, it is Waiting. It's called Music.
Music.
By the Dirty Little Trollops.
And my eyes hardly open, so I drop to the bed, hit the pillow, and then I wake up to a new day, the restlessness ends. But the thought in my mind that wanders is still mine. Hanging with a few that makes you feel so secluded. To the world and leave the style of your own. That is strange, like hypocrisy, the things that you love. But you gotta dislike the people that you show. The world.
Alright, so you've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This was episode 106.
106.
106.
What's the name of the show, Mary?
Geothermal.
Geothermal. Geothermal.
So wait a minute. 106?
Yeah, ciento.
Ciento?
Ciento es seis. Maybe it's active.
What?
That's 106.
Who?
Ciento.
No.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
What do you say, Tony?
Sex and hundet.
Oh, okay. I'm saying that's what it is in Spanish. I see what Okay, all right. Yep, you're right. You're right.
See, because I like saying it in German better, because the way you say six in German, much nicer word.
Okay. All right, so. All right.
So this is Tony Bemis.
Matt Enders.
And Mary Tomich.
Saying have a good week. See you next week.